Okey-dokey. Are you ready?
I am, yep.
Okay. Good morning.
Hello, old friend.
And how are you proceeding?
I am having a ton of fun, as always, living through this shift and seeing it through the lens of what you've been telling us all these years, but also it kind of looking at some of the other channeled information that's coming through and having fun kind of bouncing that off of what you've told us. And, you know, as we've talked about in the past, one of the things that draws me to you so much is the idea of the agenda being all about the least distortion. And so one of the things I like to do as I move throughout my day is compare whatever I'm seeing or hearing against kind of, you know, the lens again of what you've provided. And so today I'd like to kind of continue exploring some of the concepts we've explored in the past, but also see how it filters through some of this other information that's coming through. And maybe see if we can call out some of the distortion or not. There.
Very well.
Okay. So we last talked about 10 months ago. It was December of 2015, and the U.S. presidential election was just really kind of heating up. And you and I talked about how interesting it was at that point. We talked about Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, but primarily I was fascinated by the electorate and the kind of the ability of the electorate to support these two individuals, kind of on polar opposites of the political spectrum. But the similarity in many cases was we're fed up with the system. The system does seem like it's a bit rigged for us. And, you know, if you're leaning left, a lot of those folks were leaning Bernie, which tends to fall in line with some of what I think the shift is going to unfold. And then, you know, if a bunch of folks on the right were leaning Donald Trump. But it's just fascinating to watch that political circus, I'll use the word, kind of unfold over the past year. Because back then, before one vote was cast, you know, we talked about Trump being bold and a reformer and Bernie Sanders having staying power. And I watched the process where he did stay in. And I still think, even though he doesn't have the nomination, his impact is going to be quite lasting in terms of, you know, what he called a political revolution, where he got a whole bunch of people involved in saying, you know what, we're not going to stand up for this anymore. We're not going to take it. But the one who obviously has staying power is Mr. Trump. And so I wanted to talk about him a bit in the context of some channeled information that I've recently been introduced to through the forum. This one individual's name is Patrick, and he channels, among other things, a group called The Committee. And I've looked at some of the historical kind of information that they talked about, and it's quite interesting where this group, they seem quite accurate. They resonate with your information quite a bit, although I see different flavors in all these different channels, you know, different points of view, different perspectives. And that's where I tend to like to try to call out some potential distortion of the belief systems of the channel. But in this particular case, the committee, according to Patrick, was very adamant or confident that Donald Trump will be our next president. And they describe it as based on the probabilities that they see. The probabilities are so strong that that he's going to be the president. I first read this in the middle of the summer, and my first reaction was, ah, that's a distortion coming through the channel, Patrick. It must be his political leanings against Hillary Clinton or in favor of Donald Trump. And it was right around the time of the British vote to exit, Brexit as they call it, and they called that early in a correct way, and that was kind of interesting. So when they talk about probabilities, you've talked about most probable, less probable, probabilities. My question to you is, I guess the real question is, based on the probabilities, are these guys somewhat accurate? Is there a high probability that Donald Trump will become president? And before you answer, at first my reaction was, there's no way, this can't be true. Just because he is such an unconventional presidential candidate in terms of what that figurehead represents and how they behave and what they mean as a figure for representing the people. But he's been sticking around so long in what anyone else would have otherwise been gone politically so long ago, I think there is probably a high probability based on how this election is going to pan out that he will win this thing. What say you?
What I would express presently is there a significant probability or potential, let us say,
yep,
that this individual could win? Yes, there is. I would also say that at this point, the potential is almost even.
Yeah, and that's what the polls seem to show for quite some time now.
What I would also express is that the significant piece of this equation continues to be that third individual. But in relation to that third individual, dependent upon what direction many individuals choose at the actual time of election, the third individual will likely be a significant factor in determining which of the official candidates is successful, if either.
Yeah, interesting. And by the way, that's one of the fascinating things about this. Again, it's not as much about the figurehead themselves. It is about, for me, one of the fascinating things is we talked about the mechanics of a shift, and before we talked about, you know, Donald Trump being an enzyme or a catalyst that's helping kind of deconstruct the facade, if you will, of the political structures. And there's a lot of dissatisfaction because they do not seem to work for us anymore. They're certainly not functioning or functional. They're quite dysfunctional in terms of doing what they're there to do. I see the probabilities or the possibilities being quite large that those frustrated individuals that were aligning with the third individual, Bernie Sanders, would cast a vote his way, just because that's really what they feel in their heart, or as a protest. The same perhaps with a Gary Johnson, who's a third-party candidate that I think, you know, libertarian views are also more in line with what the shift seems to portend, where it's more about the individual rights and, you know, you create your own reality, kind of a governance versus a top-down authoritarian type of a model.
I would agree. And in that, I would express that this particular time framework is interesting to observe because it is being influenced by this shift. And in that, there are many individuals that are looking at their right to vote and their vote itself differently, rather than resigning themselves to two choices. There are many individuals that are moving in the direction of expressing contrary to what the general perception has been almost throughout your history, that you have two choices, and if you don't move in the direction of either one of those two choices, that you are, in a manner of speaking, throwing away your vote.
Right.
But there are many individuals whose perception is strong enough in relation to themselves and what they want, and placing themselves in a more important position than previously, in that perceiving that if they choose differently than the two that are being offered, that they are not actually throwing away their vote, that they are generating a statement, and that that is important to them.
Yeah, absolutely. We use the term selling your soul to the devil as a, you know, if you're casting your lot with the, you know, a wrong sword, and it almost seems distasteful or unpalatable to a lot of people to kind of choose to cast a vote for somebody that they really don't believe in or want to represent as their figurehead.
Correct. And in this, I would express that the significant evidence in all of this is the emergence of the individual.
Yeah.
And the importance that is being given to the individual. In that, I would say that individuals are recognizing their power much more and are not as concerned with who the figurehead is as much as they are in expressing themselves and their own importance.
Yeah, and it's interesting because obviously I get to view this whole thing through the lens of, you know, 20 years or so, close to that, of your information and others that I've afforded myself. But it is fascinating to watch the reaction of others who don't or haven't afforded themselves. And that's where I think a lot of the fear is playing into, certainly the nationalistic, not just here in the U.S., but globally, appeal of we got to hunker down and close off borders and close off ourselves, if you will, to protect ourselves against this world that is unrecognizable, that doesn't behave the way that I expected. You hear the TV experts, the pundits say that continually. I can't believe this. I've never seen anything like this in my life. And my reaction, laughingly a little bit, is, well, you're in the middle of a shift storm. The shift is hitting the fan, if you will. And of course it's...
And in this also, this is another point that is significant, is that in your history, you have moved in proactive directions and isolation directions, neither of which has been tremendously successful. And at this point, you find yourself in a different position, in questioning, based on history and what has not been successful, what are other choices that you can generate collectively as a nation, so to speak,
yeah,
that may produce more successful outcomes, but in very like manner to individuals nation was a collective does not know what those other choices are any more than you as an individual know what your choices are when you move into unknown territory.
Yeah. It is a bit unnerving. This is interesting stuff. Hey, shifting gears slightly, and again, I wanted to explore some of this other channeled information and some of the I'm always fascinated by the mechanics of it. You and I have talked about the relationship with you and Mary and the interplay and how, you know, you make something like an energy exchange occur. The committee, one of the differences that Patrick, and by the way, for those listening, if you want to learn about the committee, there's a website called theamendment.com. Patrick tends to post occasionally, but he talks about how the committee comes through, and he describes it almost like three voices that are coming through simultaneously as one voice, almost like a chorus singing. And that struck me just as the difference between you. We know that you don't do this alone. There are other essences that have been participating in conjunction, and I've kind of, but you come through as the voice essentially to us. And I use the musical kind of comparison of a chorus singing all together like a church chorus, or a rock band, or a band with a front man and supporting musicians playing different instruments, doing different functions. But I'm just curious about that. The approaches. And maybe it's just like here, we could do both in terms of physical terms. You can listen to music with the chorus singing, and all the voices are synchronized in alignment. And then the approach where you're coming through kind of as the function of the voice, if you will, of the band.
I would express that as an excellent analogy. Very accurate and very clear. In this, what I would express is that in any energy exchange, there's always more than one essence that is participating. But I would also express that as I have said to all of you many times previously, how the energy exchange is generated, for the most part, is the choice of the individual within physical focus. The physical individual incorporates most of the choices in relation to the configuration of the energy exchange, not the agenda of the essences that are participating, but how it is expressed. In this, as I have expressed previously, Michael's choice was to engage with one essence. And therefore, that is what occurs. Does that mean that the other essences are not participating? Of course not, they are. But Michael engages one energy, which would be my own.
Yeah.
In this, as I expressed, all energy exchanges incorporate more than one essence in conjunction with the information that is being offered and the energy that is being expressed. But in that, there are different directions of information. And I would express that with most energy exchanges, whatever essence the individual is interacting with, and however they are interacting with them, eventually the spectrum of the information, the subjects that are incorporated or involved will expand. It is very rare that an individual would be engaging in energy exchange and be limited to one subject or even one group of subjects. Eventually that does expand, and in this it is much more efficient and effective to be incorporating multiple essences in relation to that expanse of information.
Yeah,
and to accommodate more and more energy. Remember, I expressed the time framework ago in one of our group interactions that when I am engaging with a group interaction, I am not only engaging with the individuals that are present at that group interaction. I'm engaging with them and all of the individuals that they will encounter and all of the individuals that they will encounter and so on and so on. And this is the situation with any energy exchange. Therefore, the more volume of the participation, the more it is efficient to engage a group of essences, regardless of how you configure that in relation to the individual that is engaging the channeling, so to speak.
Yeah, and that's quite interesting, and you know, it is. I kind of gleaned that early on. You mentioned that, you know, the different essences participating were representing different essence families. And it makes perfect sense that you're kind of getting a well-rounded worldview, if you will. We certainly do that here physically. We'll get, you know, teams put together regardless of what you're trying to accomplish, and it'll be people with various essence families likely that are, you know, doing, providing certain functions, bringing certain talents, certain expertise to whatever endeavor they're partaking.
Exactly.
So on that, you know, one of the things I wanted to ask you about Tomkin, he's recently coming out, and, you know, to use the analogy of the band, he's, you know, we've got rock bands that have, you know, somebody's the primary lead singer, and then you get somebody come off and do their own gig, and the personality of the second singer is quite different and unique. It's fun to listen to his sessions because obviously the information is quite resonant. There's no contradictions, but he, you know, we talk about personalities. His personality is different than yours and the way he comes across, and I think that works for different individuals to receive it. But for me personally, I wanted to ask you this question for quite some time. When I first read the name Tomkin, something resonated with me. There was part of it probably, or potentially, was it's just a unique name. I had never heard it before. We use Tom, Thomas, Tom, you know, but Tomkin was unique. But I've always wondered if the reason that resonates and that I've often been brought back is that if there's some other kind of a connection between Tomkin and myself.
I would express that many individuals resonate with Tomkin. And one of the reasons for that is that Tomkin is an essence that has, for generations, generations and generations and generations, very consistently chosen to be interactive with individuals within physical focus. Not in a channel capacity per se, but in an interactive manner, generally with small children. And this essence has frequently, for a considerable volume of time, generated the type of interaction with small children in which adults classify as an imaginary friend.
Yeah.
And Duncan actually has consistently appeared to children in many different forms, and that has generated what you would term to be a lasting touch with many, 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 many individuals.
Interesting. Go ahead.
Also have encountered him in several different focuses.
Yeah.
Therefore, there is an automatic familiarity and resonance and draw to this essence.
Perfect. Thank you. You know what, I did hear him say that in a session recently. The other thing that I wanted to talk to you about, comparing notes, is the Earth reconfiguration. The last time we spoke, you and I talked about how the Earth was, you know, more of a flattened shape, a snow globe. We kind of used that analogy before. And Tomkin recently talked about Earth reconfiguration as well as some of the other channeled information or entities. So I wanted to explore that a little bit. So since you and I talked about that potential of a flat Earth back in December of 2015, I've been trying to conceptualize, you know, because as we mentioned then, you think of the Earth as this big, solid, massive, singular thing that changes very, very slowly. But as I look at how an Earth could have gone from a flattened side to kind of more of a spherical, even though it's not completely spherical, it seems to me that the area of South America and Africa, if we think of puzzle pieces, could have fit nicely together. And I think Europe and the Americas would have come there. If that was the flattened side, I can envision the Earth blowing up like a balloon, if you will, on that side to create the more spherical shape and also the separation of those continents. Is that accurate at all?
I would express that as an interesting theory.
Which less probable is what I'm hearing.
What I would say to you is not to interpret what we were discussing in a black and white manner.
Yeah.
What I would express is, I am aware, difficult not to do, but in this, it is a matter of recognizing that, in a manner of speaking, you interpreted two realities that overlap each other. Therefore, figuratively speaking, two probable realities overlapping each other, and therefore one being expressed in what you would think of as the more dominant position, and the other in a more recessive position, and then eventually the recessive probable reality becoming the dominant probable reality.
Yeah.
Now, in fact, for a time, not from the beginning of time, therefore not throughout the entirety of your history and your evolution, but for a time in your history, the probable reality in which your world, your planet even, was a disk rather than a sphere, was that probable reality moving into the primary position or the dominant position. Now, that only occurred for, relatively speaking, a brief time framework in your history. There was a time framework prior to that in which the more spherical shape was in the primary position, and then it returned to the primary position or dominant position subsequent to that brief time framework. But this is an example of how strongly your reality can actually alter in very significant capacities that involve your entire world and how it is configured. It also is an example of probable realities that they coexist with each other, in a manner of speaking, alongside of each other, although not quite alongside of each other, or in this, that is the purpose of separation. I have expressed many times, all realities occupy the same space arrangement. Therefore, the space is the same. It is separated by certain factors that conceal one from another. But they all exist simultaneously, and they all exist in the same space arrangement. Therefore, they could and can and have, at times, exchange positions in which a probable reality, or what you would look at as a probable reality, may become your primary reality and then alter again. Probable realities are all of the realities that you are not choosing to be your official reality. But they exist, and they exist at the same time and in the same place as your reality.
That is quite helpful, and I think you've basically answered a huge part of what I was going to ask about next. I thought, as I was mentioning, that blowing up as a balloon, and that's very singular, very linear time focused, that it's evolution. One's going to follow another after another after another. And so thank you for that. And that helps me, because part of the other channeled information that's coming through talks about we're getting ready to move through a shift, a harmonic or vibratory shift. And they use the term third dimension to fourth dimension to fifth dimension oftentimes. And I think in the spirit of lack of distortion, it's not a dimensional shift, because if you're within a reality in a particular dimension and you change your vibrational frequency, if you will, your vibrational signature that we've talked about before, that you will experience different things. So as we hear other channeled informations talk about in the short term, some are saying it's fall of 16, others are by the end of 17, that we're getting ready to kind of move through a harmonic shift, an ascension. Some people are using the term, and to me that could mean vibratory ascension, higher vibrational frequency, if you will. That tends to be exactly what you're talking about. There's probable realities. They all exist simultaneously. You choose to align or participate in one. And at certain points, you would morph from a flat Earth to a not, potentially, or not. But one of the, Bashar in particular, said that in short term, you know, he first talked about years ago, I think it was 2012, that, you know, trains leaving a station are all closely aligned with all the tracks and the different paths. But as you get further and further from the station, the tracks start to diverge, the different paths. And depending on which path you're choosing, which train you're on in this analogy, you would experience a different reality, if you will. And he uses that to kind of say, be on a particular path if you want to experience this ascension or not. I'm curious about the distortion. I don't think I'm explaining it very well, but a lot of these folks are talking about moving into a different Earth, a higher vibrational Earth, and if you're aligned with that energetically, vibrationally, you'll participate in that Earth, and others who are not aligned with it will participate in another Earth. What do you say to that concept?
What I would say is, I would not disagree with it. What I would say is, the manner in which it is being presented can easily lead individuals in a direction of thinking or imagining that is not quite accurate. But as for what is being expressed itself, I would agree with as a possibility. Let me put it in this manner. Part of the action of this shift is to be thinning those veils of separation. Now remember, this shift, first of all, is a master source event.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that it is such an immense alteration that it cannot be fully inserted into your reality completely.
Yes, you told us that before, yeah.
It will be for the most part, but I would express that it is such an immense alteration that in its entirety, it could not be completely inserted into your reality. But the other piece in this is that this shift applies to your reality. Now, does that mean that it can and will be in varying degrees affecting of other realities? Of course, because if you are altering your reality, it will be affecting of other realities by extension indirectly. But the other realities are not shifting. Now, in this, in that capacity of one of the factors of this shift is thinning the veil of separation.
Mm-hmm.
In doing that, it does allow more choices in relation to probabilities and dimension. Well, if you are not eliminating, but thinning those veils of separation, then by extension, you would have the ability to choose in relation to what you are participating with, which would include your choice to participate with other dimensions besides your own. Now, there is a limitation to that. This is what I am expressing in relation to the manner in which that information was offered. Generate an implied expression that you could board one of those trains and that you would move to a different reality permanently. That once you leave the station, if you are choosing a particular train, that is the train you are on, and whatever its destination is, that is where you will be and remain. That is not necessarily accurate. I would agree that the analogy is very creative, and in what is being stated, it is correct. I would agree with it, but not in the implication or the inference that it would lead you into a different reality, and that would be your reality from that point on.
Yeah, and that's,
so,
that's helpful.
In lessening separation, does that increase your choices? Most definitely so. And in those increased choices, it does give you the ability to move between dimensions and explore that, and therefore you could be engaging other dimensions, other probable realities, but not to generate that as your official reality. You chose to be engaging this reality, this physical dimension. Therefore, the configuration of your energy, your physical manifestation, everything is in alignment with the blueprint of this reality. Therefore, it also does not fit in other realities. Can you temporarily engage another reality? Yes, you can. If you chose to engage that reality in a permanent capacity, that would mean that you would disengage from this reality, which you could choose, but it would not automatically happen.
Yeah, and I'm envisioning the Malaysian Flight 370 that we talked about, where those individuals disengaged from this reality and reconfigured and moved to a different...
Correct. You would not occupy both.
Right. And that's interesting, and this is helpful because as I... And you're absolutely right. When you hear something like that, and another more recent analogy he added was more of... If you move into the higher frequency, the fourth dimension reality, I don't know if you said that, but from the third, there'll be a bit of a screen door between you and those in the lower vibrational reality, if you will. And you could still see them, but there would be some separation. And I thought, well, I don't want to lose friends and family. You know, you're thinking in those terms. It's almost like that rapture concept from Christianity where, you know, some go away and others stay and remain behind, which I don't buy into. But
correct. And this is the reason also that I do not move in this direction and that I do not express in relation to higher and lower vibrational qualities. Are there higher and lower vibrational qualities? Yes, there are, but they do not mean what most of you interpret them to mean. They are merely different. They are not better or worse. They are not more expanded or less expanded. They are different. They are different expressions. And in this, the idea that is generated in many of these directions of this type of information is that higher means better.
Yeah.
Or more enlightened.
Right.
And that is not necessarily correct. That is not necessarily accurate. It is different. It is not necessarily better or more enlightened. And in actuality, if you were to genuinely be exploring vibrational qualities, you could actually move in that direction with considerably or extremely low vibrational qualities also. At extreme, you could explore very different aspects of reality that you might also perceive as enlightened because it is different. Higher is not necessarily better.
Yeah.
Lower is not necessarily less than.
Well, that's interesting when you say that, because even when some of these folks are talking about the use of tools to achieve a higher vibrational quality, cannabis, some of the other natural kind of plants that you could assume from all sorts of things, versus lower, perhaps alcohol fits into that, that would potentially lower your vibrational frequency. I don't know where I'm going there, but people tend to do fall into that thing of, I want to achieve a higher vibrational state, whether it's cannabis, LSD, the South American plant, those tools that change vibrational qualities of the experience of our physical consciousness, physical body consciousness.
I am understanding, and let me express here in this capacity, in a very physical capacity, you could view the spinning and the splitting of an atom as being very high vibrational frequency. And you can see the power that is expressed in that. It is tremendously powerful. But now let me offer a different expression. That the vibrational quality that is expressed by elephants and sloths, it's expressed extremely low vibrational qualities. If expressed in enough strength, can actually generate disturbances of tectonic plates in your earth. Therefore, can generate equally as powerful physical expressions. They are merely different. Therefore, is one better than the other? Is one stronger than the other? Is one more powerful than the other? Not necessarily. They're different.
That's fascinating. You know, and something I had jotted down to talk to you about in some of Tompkins' sessions, where he talks about reconfiguration, as well as some others, a woman named Lisa Rainier. They talk about particles, and you and I have talked about particle theories and how that works, but they're talking about part of this Earth's reconfiguring on the inside is somewhat about particles colliding, which they do all the time, and the manner in which these particles are colliding, and how that is, and I don't know if you might want to elaborate on this, but how that is playing a prominent role in this Earth reconfiguring of, I'm sure, tectonic plates and other things being part of this reconfiguration. It comes back to, you know, what particles are vibrating, and obviously there's this vibrational tone to how the Earth is reconfiguring at a very subatomic level, at a linked subconsciousness level, of course, even subjective, objective, but it struck me because I was thinking of this singular, you know, the Earth inflates like a balloon concept, and then they come up along with, no, it's changing at a very minute particulate matter.
Any? Yes, I would very much agree. And in that, it is... accurate. I would agree.
Yeah, and that's... go ahead.
And in this, yes, that it is changing structurally. But that is not new.
Right.
It is changing in a different capacity in relation to the impact that you have collectively generated in relation to the surface configuration and atmospheric configuration in relation to your planet, which is creating a reaction that the planet itself is reconfiguring itself again in adjustment. And in that, I would express using both of those degrees, not necessarily extremes, but both of those polar degrees of very high and very low frequencies that generate different manifestations, different functions, and in that configure the energy and the structure of your planet very differently. And yes, it is being generated in what you would term as a particle level. This is also one of the reasons that your scientists are so fascinated with particles, because they can't explain them.
Yeah.
They don't understand how it is possible for particles to appear and disappear, or for them to be in two places at one time.
Right, yeah. And, you know, as I...
that, I would express that that also is an inclusion of these vibrational qualities, but it is not limited to a higher vibration. That it is not a matter of only a higher vibration can allow you to generate those types of movements or those types of reconfigurations. That is incorrect. That is an incomplete expression. It is only looking at one piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, that's actually quite helpful. And as we close out here, as I try to conceptualize some an Earth configuration or reconfiguration at that level, you know, I keep coming back to these models of tetrahedron shapes, and you and I talked about ley lines in the past and a energetic grid that not only runs through the physical Earth, but throughout the atmosphere and around it. And it would seem to me that back to our, you know, template level versus physical level, that you're reconfiguring, certainly at the template level, you know, that helps drive this energetic, potentially a framework shift of how the ley lines are structured and the shapes that would then create changes on a physical, particle, and molecular, and then on and on and on to the full Earth.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
That I would definitely agree with.
And maybe that's where some of these channeled informations we're talking about from an ascension perspective. It's using the word ascension does, you think about in religious terms, the ascension means higher, more, better, if you will. But it's more of a Well, there you go. It's basically a reconfiguring. I like your word.
Yes, it is. I am expressing that these concepts, these expressions, it is not that they are inaccurate. It is the manner in which they are being expressed. It is the terminology that is being incorporated that generates implications or ideas that distort it, not that the information itself is inaccurate, but in the manner that it is being presented, it can be expressed in many different manners in implications, and those implications reinforce separation.
Right. No, I appreciate that, and even as I said on the outset, I really appreciate your information. I love the idea of pursuing the lack of distortion or the minimization of distortion, because I realize, even as I listen to you and your concepts, that as it filters through my beliefs and my ultimate perception, that I'm distorting as well. And that's the fun part, that's the fascinating part, to try to figure this out. In many ways, it is a game to me, but I do appreciate your help on this journey.
You are very welcome, my friend.
Well, I heard the beep, so we should give Mary her life back.
And as it should be again.
No, absolutely, and that's the part that you have to keep reminding yourself, because it is. As I said, we're in the middle of a shift storm, or a shift is hitting the fan, and trying to remind myself that, you know, if whoever gets elected as our figurehead, it really matters not if I am truly creating my reality. I get to choose how I live my life, and regardless of those external kind of things that are going on. It's fun to look at it that way.
Oh, definitely. I agree.
Yeah.
I shall certainly be anticipating our next meeting, my friend, perhaps in less of a time frame.
I agree. This is always fun. Thank you.
You are very welcome. Your wondrous lovingness and tremendous encouragement to you, as always. Au revoir.
Au revoir. Thank you.